Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
It's the Short Coat Podcast from the students at the University of Iowa, Carver College of Medicine. Welcome back, listeners. You know something, Aline Sanduk, John Pienta, Nathan Miller, and Terrence Wong, and Casey McCleary?
What?
Hey. Medicine is a conservative profession. I don't know if you've noticed.
How so?
Well, and working for a medical school, probably even more so. What I mean is that we're very careful about lots of things. For instance, we have to be careful not to offend important people in state government. Or poke fun at those who live with infirmities, or talk about people's weird fringe religious beliefs, or drive while intoxicated.
At least not in front of them.
Terrence, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm proposing today that we let our hair down, that we break these chains, that we rise up and mock things that shouldn't be mocked during the show today.
God, are you about to get us in trouble?
Because it's fun!
Are you punking
Dave,
me?
Dave,
are you entrapping us?
I'm already upset. I don't have hair.
When I considered pointing that out, but I decided that you would go there. So, we should do it because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. Mm-hmm. Except for religious beliefs. I mean, we probably shouldn't mock those.
Why are they superior?
I don't know. It just seems... And the infirmities. People wouldn't like that, I think.
Are we going to be equal opportunity mockers or not?
Well, let's try to, you know, we
What's
can do
left?
Whatever we want. Let's try to keep important people from getting too upset as well, okay? And don't drive drunk.
Well, obviously.
That's totally not cool.
So that is totally open to being made fun of.
But everything else is fair game.
So what do you want us to talk about?
Well.
What are you prepping us for?
I don't know. I'm not prepping you for anything. I'm just saying that I'm releasing my inner snark, my inner sarcasm.
I see.
Okay, so
you're cultivating a new culture of openness.
That's right.
On the show.
That's right. And nothing says openness like making fun of other people. So if it turns out that you get angry at what we say today, folks, tell us at theshortcoat.com/tell us.
Are you trying to make people angry just to get comments?
Can we make fun of anyone who says infirmities?
Yeah. Is infirmities a bad one? In fact, listeners, you might just want to have that page loaded up and ready to go while you're listening today. But anyway, welcome back to the show. You guys, I think for some of you, it's been kind of a difficult week. So was there anything, what were your difficulties this week and what sort of kept you going? Aline?
My big difficulty this week was shifting my perspective to be okay with being behind. Being like not one or two lectures behind in my studies, but like six or seven, maybe even eight lectures deep.
How many of you are behind?
Always behind. Mm-hmm. It's compensated, but
I'm okay always. Right now.
I've redefined behind. So I guess I'm never behind.
Behind is now normal.
So, was there something in particular that helped you this week?
Yes. So, in case you guys haven't heard, there's a really cool new service called Songza. It's free, and it's like Pandora, but way cooler. Like, if you download the app, you've got, like, different stations for different moods and activities. And so, I was kind of exploring over the weekend, and I found the one for coding. And I then gravitated towards the, like, movies.
Like, computer coding.
Yeah,
okay.
Like background music for coding. Mm. And I started playing the film soundtrack channel, and it was awesome. And the first one that came on was Last of the Mohicans.
Oh.
And I was I just got in a zone, and I felt like I was him, and I was the last Mohican. It was awesome.
Let's see if we can capture a flavor of what Aline's been listening to. I feel inspired.
Don't you though?
I had a phase of this already. I had a phase of studying with epic soundtracks. And then it wasn't very productive because I ended up getting very aggressive and ready to fight wars. I ended up not focusing on studying.
It's really hard to study when you want to like put a hatchet in somebody's face.
Yeah. I want to be on like a hill with like a swooping panorama going around me, and I'm like, no.
While you stab a fellow Native American, right?
I mean, there are some other things that are going to have to change before I can stab a fellow Native American.
Well, you know, just trying to put that into perspective.
Oh, there goes
for you.
The comments page.
Yeah. Light it up, listeners. I'm going to unsubscribe. I also felt, I didn't have a tough week, but I did have, you know, one of those weeks where I had to keep, you know, keep things moving, keep things going. And a week where I sort of felt like I had to redefine what success meant. Okay, so in my job, when I'm not doing this, I am, you know, doing stuff behind the scenes. You know, nobody, you know, if I do my job well, nobody notices. And if I don't do my job well, then people notice. And so, you know, there's a lot of activity for me this week around that. And at some point, I ran across this article by Luke Murray, MD. Luke is actually a first-year family medicine resident who reminds us that we all choose a benchmark by which we judge success. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we choose that benchmark according to what other people have told us that benchmark should be, and then other people, you know, sort of take the reins and choose that benchmark for themselves. And that's what he advocates we should do. Specifically, you know, he advises med students who invest all of their time and energy into medical school that your definition of well, you know, doing well affects your self-image and your attitude, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, change the metric. What does doing well mean to you? What should it mean to you? So I have to be content with that because I'm not an actor. I'm not a president. I'm not a medical school dean. You know, like, people aren't always watching me, you know. So Murray says he chooses. This is what he does. He chooses every morning to focus on the fact that he's living a dream that he's been striving toward for years. Right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so many people forget that.
I know. Yeah. I know.
As much as we complain, we're so lucky to be here.
I personally have been striving towards being a medical school clerk all my life. I mean, since I was a tiny baby.
Dream big.
Instead of focusing on grades, he advises, you know, just try to reframe it so that you're focused on how much better you're getting at the process of learning. Right?
Yeah.
So he's making his own choice about what to focus on as a measure of his worth by reframing what it means to be worthy. And I thought that was pretty cool. Especially, you know, like, I don't know, a lot of people have weird ideas about what being productive is. You know, like, as long as you're, like, working constantly at annoying tasks, you're doing what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, F that.
Mm-hmm. You know, this...
make it less annoying. That's what I'm saying.
There's that old adage, right, that, you know, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. In medical school, the only thing we have measurable and that we even focus on are grades, right?
Right.
And so you'd want to talk about defining the metric. I mean, what is metric? It's a measurement, right? So the only thing we have a measurement of, and in fact, our society in general has gone this way, right? The only thing we have measurements of are, you know, monetary things.
Grades, productivity,
right?
Bank measurements, account.
Rankings, and money.
You know, that's largely an American thing, I'd say. Americans put a very big emphasis on, okay, what's the problem? Okay, now we've identified the problem. Now we need to set some goals. And we're going to accomplish this by next week. We're going to accomplish this by next month. And then, and also, like, a lot of the goals orient around money.
It's a capitalist thing.
It's totally,
I mean,
a capitalist thing.
It's not just
thing.
An American thing.
That's true. But what country on earth represents, you know, is the beacon of capitalism? And I'd say that's most prevalent here. For example, in no other country on earth do people say make money. Everyone else earns money. And that's the idea in America, that you can create money out of nothingness, whereas in most other cultures, wealth is a limited commodity that we all share. And when one has more, it means others have less. But not in America. You can create that.
Terrence, you're a future robber baron. What do you...
So I just wanted to comment on with that family resident. He said that you should be more appreciative and I guess... know the things that you have, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of have the opposite attitude to that. Mm-hmm. Like, every single day I wake up, I try to forget about everything that I have and start from, like, start from zero. And the reason for that is so that you stay hungry and you never settle and get comfortable and get relaxed. I kind of have this mindset that you should always be going at 1,000 miles an hour. But then that's also what maybe why I'm a little bit crazy, which I totally am.
But I think he's saying, I think he's saying exactly that. Just, I mean, you have, all he's saying is pick your thing, yeah. Pick what you do, and then go by that. Set your own lights.
Yeah,
which is, you know, if you can do it, it's cool.
To me, I think you need to find a balance of that, a balance between sort of being satisfied with where you are but still always striving for more. Being satisfied doesn't mean you have to stop working. It just means that you're happy with where you are now, and you know that there's a future, and you know you can keep improving and keep learning, but you don't expect yourself to already know everything and be done with everything and have to do everything right this second. That's something that I had to forcibly teach myself throughout undergraduate, because there's always going to be another golden ring that you can grab. Like, once you've grabbed the golden ring, oh, there's another one. You know, getting to med school is not enough. Now you have to get perfect honors. Now you have to get awards. Now you have to get, like, prestigious appointments. It never ends, and you have to, at some point, just learn to be happy at any one time with what you have.
Well, that's what I mean. I think that when you find satisfaction, that necessarily means that to some degree there is stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in stagnation. I only understand efficiency and productivity. That's all I know.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a robot?
I am a robot.
Oh my goodness.
But that's not this is not like, I wouldn't prescribe this to anyone, because it's a really like crazy lifestyle. It is.
But it's very, like, it's what's right for you is what you're saying.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, if that makes you happy, then by all means.
But can we still judge you, Terrence, for your weirdness? Is that all right? Can we still do that? Do you mind?
I can judge anyone.
You said we could at the beginning of the show.
That's right.
So we will.
Freak.
No, but, you know, I'd like to come back to something Casey said. And actually, it's something Jason talked about earlier in the week at another meeting that we went to, where
who is this Jason? Oh, is this Jason T. Like Lewis?
Totally mythical person. Yes.
Jason T. Lewis, our executive producer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Jason. So he made a point about, like, should we even consider it a metric to be happy? Like, why do we have to be happy all the time?
Oh, man. Terrence and I had a long discussion about this last week.
Yeah. Really? Well.
Yeah, I want to be happy. And Terrence is like, no, happiness isn't a real thing.
Terry,
I'm very choosy of my words right now, because then there's PRT and then there's real life T. I just think that happiness is very much overrated. That's how I feel. I mean, what do you guys think?
I think it's okay to be sad. There's nothing wrong with it. And in fact, I'd even go further and say that it is more the norm to be sad than to be happy. But it's not socially acceptable to be sad, and everyone masks their sadness. But in fact, I mean, the hardest thing I think for people to accept is that it's totally normal to have psychological and emotional pain. Yeah. Like, I bet more, like, an exceedingly large number of people are depressed than would openly talk about it or on antidepressants. And that's because they think that they're alone. But actually, it's the people who don't have psychological suffering who are abnormal. They're the minority, I think.
Yeah, and I think people are extremely mean to themselves about being sad. Like, and once you start feeling bad about feeling bad, that is a rabbit hole that nobody wants to walk down. But
so true.
I think a lot of people go there, and our culture kind of encourages you to go there to feel bad for feeling bad, and you need to just tough it out and work harder. But sometimes it's okay to just come to peace with that and be like, all right, things suck right now, but have hope.
Yeah, or you need to buy more stuff.
Buy more stuff.
That'll make you happy.
No.
Which was one of Jason's points.
We do not endorse this.
Yeah.
Personally, I feel like this. Just because you're not, you know, like, having fun all the time or, you know, having a great time doesn't mean you have to be sad either. Like, I mean, I got into medical school. I wasn't expecting to, like, just have joyous days every day. You know, I sit and study and things, but, you know, it's just routine. I'm investing for the future, you know, be happy later.
Being satisfied is more what that is than just, like, happy. Like, you're satisfied with where you are in life.
Or maybe that's even true. Balanced.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be... I think maybe sad is the wrong word for what I'm trying to think, but, like, why does there need to be a drive always towards being different than what you are? Why are we not happier with just what's happening at the moment. Like, indulge in that, enjoy that, because the next moment's going to be different, I think.
Nathan, your statement reminded me of trying to get my children to eat. Because they, you know, like, they're like, this is terrible. And I keep saying, you don't have to like it. You know, you don't have to love what you're eating. Just put it in your face and shut up.
You'll die. Don't you understand?
That's right.
If you don't eat this, I'll go to jail. Sorry.
That escalated very quickly.
I think the problem is actually the word and the concept of happy. I think it conjures sort of this one size fits all. Kind of gee golly gosh, like, oh, everything is all sunshiny and wonderful notion. And I think if you want to try to model that as the ideal, it's unreasonable, and I think it's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
Yeah.
But maybe exploring a concept like flourishing, something that has different components, something that where you have different metrics rather than just sort of maximal positive attitude or maximal positive sort of pleasurable feeling. I mean, there are things that don't necessarily give us pleasure, like achievement or relationships.
I thought he was going to say a cheese.
The cheese island doesn't always give you...
I think we should live like we like the Spaniards do, or the, you know, other places that have this siesta in the middle of the afternoon. Like, this, you know, there's no productivity. There's no like emphasis on productivity.
That's just because it's literally too hot to go outside.
That's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. Well, we'll be that way in, you know, in 20, 30 years. It'll be too hot. We'll be siestaing our days away.
Maybe one day, but not, I don't see that happening in America. We do not know how to live well, I feel like, in general. But, you know, America's kind of interesting because it's a country of extremes. Like, you have extremely healthy people here, and you also have extremely unhealthy people. You have extremely conservative people and extremely liberal people. It's really, yeah, interesting.
When you reflect on the idea of happiness, like, when I reflect on happiness, I realize that I can't appreciate my happy moments in my life unless I look back to the very tragic points in my life. And I think that if we try to numb those tragedies with pills, or we try to numb it with, you know, this or that, it kind of takes away from the human experience, don't you think?
Agreed. Yeah, it depends. What do you mean by pills? Do you mean like depression medication?
Yeah. He means small ground up drugs that are sort of formed into a tiny shape that you then swallow down your throat.
Can you use this word in a sentence? No. I agree with the caveat that there is a difference between depression that's sort of sociological, where you're depressed because you're like not living well, or you're not appreciating the things, and you're just trying to avoid the natural sadness in your life. And there's also depression that is maybe genetic or causeless, and that people really can't get away from. And I do think that there's a place for medication with that, and I don't want to shame people who feel like they need to seek medication, because it's already extremely difficult, and it can be really helpful.
I think it's a point that we hit on earlier. It's okay to be sad once in a while.
Yeah,
that's okay. Like, that's part of life.
But like, the people who need to be medicated for it, like people who are continually depressed but for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's not a normal, healthy kind of sad. I don't think we're including mentally.
No, those would be the people who, I mean, if they didn't get help, they would be dead. I mean, right. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's a pretty big problem. People.
Okay, I wanted to put in the caveat because, like, I mean, it just sounded like we're just grouping everybody in. Like,
did you
suck
not
it up, it's fine to be sad.
Did you not hear the beginning of the show? Did you not hear the beginning of the show? We're going to offend people. That's the whole goal today.
Well, yeah, but there's a difference between offending people in a funny way and offending people in a way that makes them not seek out help when they need it.
That's true.
Damn it.
Ha!
I didn't realize.
I don't think any of us are talking about those people, though.
Okay.
No, yeah.
I always want to stand up for that group. It's my thing.
Right on.
So
cue the music.
Reframe your reframe your attitude, people. Get happy about whatever you want to get happy about. Aline, you also had something else you want to talk about today. Let's do it. Let's go crazy. Let's just do it now.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, cool. So I don't know if anyone else heard this this TED Talk, but I first heard of it on a podcast called
NPR's TED Radio Hour.
Yeah, that's the one. It's where I get all my news. Not really. But anyway, they featured a TED Talk that I thought was really interesting about a neuroanatomist who experienced a stroke and described her experience of having a stroke and, you know, delving into what was happening at every instant of her stroke and what part of her brain she knew was getting affected and mapping her lesion in real time.
Let's play a quick clip. I think that'll help, if you haven't heard it,
sure,
help bring it into focus for you.
So here I am in this space and my job and any stress related to my job, it was gone. And I felt lighter in my body. And imagine what it would feel like to lose 37 years of emotional baggage. Oh, I felt euphoria. Euphoria.
She, I mean,
Sounds like strokes are super fun.
I know. Have a stroke, people. You want to get happy.
There could be some commercial value in this.
Oh, God.
I mean, has everyone here seen Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
No.
It's a good movie.
Really?
It's a good movie.
You should. Put it on your list.
I don't like movies.
What?
I don't like movies.
Get out of here right now.
Leave.
The feeling of the light hitting my eyeballs just doesn't...
No, but it's... So the movie is based on the idea that you could seek out a procedure that would induce brain damage. Which it's effectively brain damage, but it erases painful memories. And I don't want to spoil the movie, but it's really, really good. And this is basically what happens. You lose years of emotional baggage that hold you back. And that sounds awesome.
Can we put like a legal disclaimer in here, like the Short Code Podcast does not endorse having strokes or
nope. In fact, I'm gonna
try this at home.
In keeping with the theme of today's podcast, I'm gonna do the opposite. Have a stroke.
Is anyone excited about House of Cards? Yeah.
Well, I think I'm having a stroke, actually.
Terrence is actually having a stroke.
Well, I wanted to link that back to
why do you ask?
Oh, I've been thinking about this like all week. This is the thing I was looking forward to.
Wait, you're changing the topic at an inappropriate time.
Sorry. I'm too excited about House of Cards.
Wow. All right. No, what I love about this quote is how happy, how happy she is to have had a stroke.
Yeah.
And it comes through elsewhere, too. You know, in other parts of her talk, she talks about how she's, you know, literally living in the moment. She's fascinated with what's happening during the stroke. I guess as a neuroanatomist,
As
a neuroanatomist, you may well, you know, be in a unique position to experience
You're
that
the most
enjoyment.
Perfectly qualified person in the universe to have a stroke.
And her interior sort of real time analysis of her stroke's effects and what brain circuits are affected, and how, you know, they sort of come and go and things like that, I think is really interesting. I like the part also about how, you know, she's talking about the relearning process, which I'd like to talk more about after we play this clip. But she's talking here about the relearning process during her recovery.
Where's peanut butter? Is there a file in my brain that understands peanut butter? And if there was, then I would say, okay. And then she would say, yeah, how about tuna fish? And I'd go hunting for the file in my brain that understood what tuna fish was. And as soon as we hit a file that I couldn't go in and hunt for and find some kind of association to, then we would relive that. So then she would give me tuna fish so that I would have that experience.
This metaphor interests me. Because, you know, we're talking about, this sort of comes up elsewhere too. She's talking about circuits and files and things like that. Is this an accurate portrayal of how the brain works? Does anybody
I'd say so.
Know?
Largely.
Based on my very, very limited understanding. Yeah, you have memories that you recall and re-experience.
We don't really know how they're, I mean, the memory of peanut butter that she's looking for, the file might be there, but the association is lost, for instance, right? I mean, that's also possible.
We can go real deep on this one, and we can, I would quote Wittgenstein, right? He said, the limit of your language...
Ladies and gentlemen, nobody has ever quoted Wittgenstein on the Short Code Podcast before. Thank you.
Wittgenstein.
I don't even know how to pronounce
it. The limit of your language is the limit of your world. And so, you know, it's really hard to conceptualize something that you have no descriptor for. And so I think you can kind of go both ways on that. And if you look at what we're investigating our world for, and we say, okay, how does this work? how do we explain that? Well, I think the computer has been really changing the way that we think about information and the way that we think about processing that. And so for her to put all of that, you know, it's not necessary that we think the brain works like a computer. I think we just model it that way.
Mm-hmm. It's the closest thing we have to compare it to, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely not a perfect analogy, but things like network theory have been extremely heavily influenced. Network theory is a new neuroscience area, but have been extremely heavily influenced by computers and the way that computers work, and we're trying to model the brain based on computers. And, you know, I don't know how far that'll take us, but it's definitely progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to put up we're sort of low on time here, so I'm not going to talk too much about this, but I wanted to mention, and I will put a link to all of this stuff in the show notes, David Rowland is an Australian forensic psychologist. He also had a stroke, and he wrote an essay about it that appeared in the website I'll post. But basically, he describes his sort of detachment after his stroke, and his also, you know, sort of real close analysis that he is now seeming to constantly go through to figure out what's going on in his life, and how it's almost like meditation. In fact, you know, a Buddhist monk or a Buddhist nun he spoke to is basically like, yeah, you're meditating way better than I ever could. So I thought that was kind of cool. I'll post that. But we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Short Code Podcast.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.
We're back on the Short Code Podcast.
I have a question that I wanted to put to you guys, and it's kind of a philosophical question, but if something exists in your head but you can't describe it, then does it really exist?
What do you mean? Can you give an example?
If you can't inform another person about it, then does it really exist?
Well, I need a...
Yes, you just said it exists.
I can't... I guess it doesn't exist because you can't describe
it. Okay, define exist.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to get hard fast.
Yeah, I know.
I'm into this.
You mean fun. I think you mispronounced fun.
All right, define exist for us.
So... take as an analogy that you live in a foreign country where you don't speak the language and you can't express the complex thoughts that you're having. And so do they really exist in a general way? If you can't inform someone, if you can't communicate what you're feeling or the idea that you're having, and it doesn't exist anywhere else but in your mind.
Is this about Kanye West?
Not everything has to be about Kanye West.
I feel like this
West.
Might be about Kanye West.
Sick of Kanye West.
It's possible that we just don't understand it yet, right? I mean, if something in space, for example, right? Some sort of like super black hole or dark matter where we don't understand it, and I can't really describe it, doesn't mean that it's not there. We just haven't yet understood it yet.
Yeah, and if you have a feeling or an emotion that you maybe don't have the words to describe, either because our language doesn't have words, or maybe you're disabled in a particular way that doesn't allow you to be very eloquent about such things, that it still exists for you personally in your world, and just because you can't physically put it out into the social world or the physical realm doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It's just existing in a different capacity than maybe something that you can see or talk about.
You know what you need to do to really wrap your head around this is have a toddler.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
That is a strange reason to tell someone to have a child.
Well,
have a child, experiment on them, have fun.
Actually, I think they experiment on you.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they do.
It goes both ways.
Yeah. So I think for me this question comes down to the sort of an idea of consciousness, because consciousness, if you think about consciousness, is always consciousness of something. You know, there it's, as the definition of consciousness goes, it doesn't seem to make sense to talk about just consciousness as like an object or a thing or, and so you know, to be conscious of this thought you can't communicate, that is in and of itself, we can consider it its own experience. And you know, it might not be a very meaningful or a very practical or useful experience, especially if you can't do anything about it or communicate it to anyone.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I feel like even consciousness exists physically, though. It's just like a neural pathway in your brain. So you can't, I mean, no one sees it. But if you had some sort of imaging technology that could see every neuron in your brain, you could still, like, at least, maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but I think theoretically someday if you could basically recreate someone's entire brain and recreate that pathway or activate it, you could recreate that thought in an identical mm-hmm. object.
Yeah, well, and that's a very deep philosophical conflict. Like, is everything that you are physically in the brain, or is there some emergent property from that, or is there some sort of dualist separation that's sort of based in the brain, but there is a you that's outside that?
Yes, Nathan Miller, are you saying I don't have a soul?
That's what I all heard. Knew
that. It may be implied.
Yes, you specifically are being targeted by this.
Check
yes,
off,
just Dave.
check off the mocking religion part.
Oh,
on the
there
list,
we go.
On the list of things that we've done.
Done.
Today.
The show just got canceled.
I think there should be an achievement list for it now. You're now a level 3 dark wizard.
We can't do any better at that if we're going to count that as mocking religion, just bringing up a pure philosophical question that has to count as mockery. Come on, we can do better.
Seriously. No, we've just proven he has no soul. I think that's pretty much it.
Oh, well, all right.
It's kind of common knowledge.
The fact that you don't like Nutella proves to me that you don't have a soul.
I never said what? I didn't like Nutella. Who are you confusing
Someone
me with?
Someone did. What? Someone
Wait,
this week did.
Who doesn't like Nutella? Who?
I'm sorry.
What?
Let's find
I'm sure,
which,
I'm pretty sure everyone likes you. Nutella, whether they admit it or not.
Witch hunt.
That's what I think.
I would drink that by the gallon.
Would you?
No.
All right.
You should go to Costco.
There will be a supplemental video of this, a Nutella watered down Nutella chugging contest hosted by Dave.
Oh, God.
This is worse than Cheese Island.
All comes back
no inside
to food.
Jokes.
You know, no. This reminds me. We're in pathology right now, and pathologists absolutely love naming things after food, and some of it is really disgusting.
What do you mean?
There's a particular thing. It's called a caseating granuloma. So caseating means cheesy.
Oh,
queso.
God.
Never gonna taste the same.
And it. You know, it's one of the most profound. Juxtapositions of like disgusting and also creativity
and delicious, deliciousness.
No. Yeah, I mean,
well, wait. When you what does can you describe a caseate what a caseating granuloma looks like? Mm. Does it? I mean, does it actually look like
it
cheese?
It looks cheesy.
It
looks
if you like take cheese. A tissue and it looks like a bunch of blue cheese infiltrated the tissue, that's what it looks like to me.
Yep.
Yeah,
blue cheese
clumpy,
specifically.
Yeah, it's like clumpy whitish.
Or feta.
Yeah, comes out of like a big hole,
yeah,
basically,
like,
in tissue.
Like
I hate you guys
cheese.
So much right now.
It's moist.
Moist.
But you know, I thought that was like a delightful non sequitur. I mean, it's all over the place. There's nutmeg liver and really disgusting pictures in the studio.
Thank you, Corey, the intern, for the picture of the caseating granuloma.
Can we send that
Earning
out?
Earning this pay today.
Ruining cheese for me forever, you guys.
You can't do that. Can't be ruined.
Nope.
All right, can you come up with other food related
the other one that came to mind was nutmeg liver. And actually, if you look at the sections of these livers, it does in fact look like a ground nutmeg.
Yeah.
The inside of a nutmeg.
But you know what,
impressive.
Here's the difference. I have no problem with that, because I never go, you know what I'd really like right now? Some nutmeg.
Doesn't it remind you of Christmas?
Nobody, yeah, but nobody. Oh, that's actually
wow.
kind of pretty.
There's also a,
that is pretty.
There's
Thanks
also
again,
a strawberry
Corey
tongue.
All right, here we go.
Strawberry tongue is awesome.
Top 10 diseases named after food. Are you all ready for this?
Sure, bring it.
Okay. Waiting for it to load. Blueberry muffin rash.
Sounds delicious.
I want that.
There's a disease photo. Oh, nutmeg liver is number 9.
I don't know if I want to be scared of blueberry rash or is that like
it's desirable?
this is the great thing about it. Like, am I hungry now or am I gonna run screaming from the pathology case?
Watermelon stomach, also known as gastric antral vascular ectasia. aphasia.
Which is why everyone calls it watermelon stomach.
Obviously. Cauliflower ear, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Old wrestler's disease.
That's right.
Ooh, there's a strawberry gallbladder as well as strawberry tongue. That's fun. Excess cholesterol deposits. That's what that does. Chocolate cysts.
Oh, those.
No one here is going to get any of these questions wrong on the boards.
The line for this one is chocolate cyst. This is one of the few cases where chocolate is not better than sex for the majority of women out there. Okay. Yikes.
My goodness.
Oh, port wine stain.
Yeah.
Knew that one.
What's that?
It's a genetic birthmark caused by a collection of swollen blood vessels near the skin surface. It's often on the face, but not.
That sounds very,
very
distinguished.
I've never had port wine before. Has anybody?
No, it's like a
sweet wine?
Yeah, it's been fortified. More alcohol, more sugar.
Oh, yeah. So like Mad Dog 2020 or something like that.
I don't know anything about
exactly
that.
Exactly like that, but totally different.
All right, top three. Bread and butter, pericarditis. Inflammation of the sac that encloses your heart.
Please don't say sack either.
Sack.
Moist.
I don't like the word sack. When I came to the Midwest, to the Midwest and checkout clerks were always offering me a sack.
Is that like a bag?
It's like a bag.
Yeah.
Why do they call it a sack?
It's a bag.
No.
Why do you guys call it a
sack? Why do we call it parking ramps in the Midwest?
There are only two sacks that I know of. Yeah, that's another one. There are only two sacks I know of. One I don't like to say on the air, but also a burlap sack. When was the last time you saw a burlap sack?
We have something called plastic now.
Yeah,
get with this century.
They use them on the giant slide at the state fair. You get on the gunny sack and you ride it down. That's seriously what they're used for.
So country.
That's wonderful.
Also, coffee beans come in burlap sacks. Okay, top two. Currant jelly sputum.
Mm.
So that's stuff that you cough up. Yummy. And cafe au lait spots, which lots of people have. If you have more than like 30 of them, or if you have giant ones, it might be indicative of a genetic disorder that we talked about.
Maybe that's a way of
you're probably
away.
Fine. Nobody freak out. You're probably fine.
Yeah.
It usually, nowadays, it's because someone spilled their latte on themselves.
I think it sounds nice.
That's a thing.
Yeah, I think it's a way of removing stigma from what might otherwise be disfiguring conditions. Like maybe it's just maybe people are like less likely to turn you into a social pariah. They're like, oh, strawberry rash, okay, that's okay, that's an okay kind of rash. Right?
That's a delicious rash.
Oh, you have currant jelly stools, huh? We're not worried about your GI tract as much as what kind of toast it goes with.
The bread and butter kind.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Moving on, anyway. Let's stop talking about this.
This week for breakfast, currant jelly sputum and bread and butter pericarditis.
I think we should start getting ready for head transplants, don't you?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, an Italian scientist by the name of Sergio Canavero has come up with a protocol which he says will work. Obviously, the first step is having the right recipient and donor. Second, it's going to be really important for the media to stop calling it a head transplant. You can't have a head transplant. Even if it works, it's just not. It doesn't make any sense.
Is it a body
transplant? It's a body transplant, right?
Oh, that makes more sense.
No, that does make sense.
Third, the head and body will be cooled to allow cells to survive without oxygen. Fourth, the two ends of the spinal cords will be flushed with polyethylene glycol, which has been shown to promote spinal cord cell growth, and or stem cells or olfactory sheathing cells, which could be used in the fusion.
What medical condition are we combating here? Death?
I think you've got a fairly well functioning mind, but your body is failing. I don't know.
Oh, now
did
I
you
feel
know?
Like a jerk because I didn't even think about that.
Did
well,
you know
I
that
mean,
death is the number one cause of death?
Yes, exactly.
I did know. I read it in a book.
That's going to be on the test.
Obviously, the muscles and blood supply would need to be joined. Post-surgery, implanted electrodes would be used to stimulate the spinal cord to strengthen new nerve connections while the patient is kept sedated. By the way, and so he thinks this is 2017, he says. This could happen by 2017.
That's super ambitious. Come on.
Mm-hmm. I think that would also, I mean...
Well, he says, I don't want to do it if society doesn't want it. But
it's
I could
be,
do it.
It's going to be so convenient really, for him that he's like, I don't have to do it now.
He's a really courteous mad scientist.
Who's donating the bodies?
Yeah, that's a good question.
If you donate your, like, liver if you're, like, dead or something, but... if you're...
Well, yeah, I mean it'd be dead. It would be a dead person, obviously. I don't think anybody's going to be like, you know what? My brother needs my body. I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, but the person who's dying is... I want
like their body,
body
can't support life already, so why
maybe they're brain dead.
Yeah.
They could be brain dead.
I feel like Italy's got bigger problems than this right now.
Yeah, but somebody's got to focus on...
Look, the mad scientist convention this year was really lame. Right? Like, you know, all the death rays have already been made. They've already been sold, so we've got to come up with something new.
The first head transplant, by the way, was done in dogs in 1955.
It's not a head transplant.
In Russia.
Actually, in this case, it kind of was, because a dog already had a head, was given a second head, after which the surgery was... And after the surgery, both dogs were definitely alive and functioning independently of of each other. The donor head, for instance, could be seen biting the recipient's ear, that of the other dog, who probably wasn't at all pleased by any of this.
This is totally different.
Wow.
This is, you've just mechanically attached a head.
Yeah.
So hooking up the entire central and peripheral nervous system to a different body is a totally different thing.
Don't denigrate the scientists of 1955. I mean, you know, back then they were barely aware a spinal cord existed.
That was in the 50s?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very impressive, actually. Wow. Mm. I mean, still ethically, but impressive.
Can I put an interesting question to you guys?
Whether it's interesting, okay?
All right, good. Fine.
Judge.
If you put one of the dog's heads underwater, can it stay there if the other dog continues breathing?
Whoa.
Absolutely, because the one that was actually the dog is the one doing all the breathing.
Depends which head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very good statement.
All right.
I feel like if we did this in humans, I mean, it would probably fundamentally change the way that the person experiences the world, because of things like embodied cognition. And so your peripheral nervous system has a lot of influence on what's actually, like, what you're feeling, and especially emotionally. And so to me, it seems like if you did this to a person, if you put a person's head on a different body, that would, like, fundamentally change their experience of the universe, even if they had the central nervous system.
That's a really good point.
Still intact.
Because we know that, for instance, there's a high concentration of neurons in your gut, and that, in fact, they call it sometimes called a second brain.
Enteric nervous system.
Enteric nervous system.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. I hadn't even really thought of that. Very cool. Good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks for widening my view.
Yes. A lot of these things.
That's what I'm here for.
They're. I think. Yeah, it's really fascinating what Casey said, that it like emotions, for example, your brain essentially reacts to the body or to some felt sensation, and kind of defines it from there. It says, oh, my heart's racing. Must be blank. I'm
scared.
Am I nervous? And it depends, you know, on what other sensory context tells you and what prior history your brain has built into it. So things like panic disorder may be defined by that. Your body has a reaction, and then your brain says, oh, okay, well, my heart's racing, so I must be freaking out. This is terrible.
Something must be attacking me.
Right.
Yeah, if you shoot people full of adrenaline and then, like, give them a test or something, they like, associate it much more with being angry or frustrated than if you don't, and they're just stuck.
Like, the same thing actually happens if you shoot people and then give them a task. They get angry and frustrated.
Wow, I can't imagine.
Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Have you tried this?
No.
Do you endorse trying it?
Not today.
Only today.
Only on this podcast.
That's right. Only today. We got to close this out, but this was awesome. What a great! I feel like we've achieved a sort of pinnacle of podcasting today. Don't you?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Whatever it is, the last thing that you said,
I'm the only person who feels this way.
Way to pay attention. I hope our audience is so attentive.
Very good. Thank you for tuning in, listeners. We'll
bye, guys. See you
do
next
some
week.
Credits now. If you like what you heard today on the Short Code Podcast, leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if we annoyed or pleased you today,
Or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave us a message at theshortcoat.com.
Oh, yeah.
Do follow and talk to us on Twitter so we can stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. The show is made possible by this strange world we live in and a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine, student government, and the Writing and Humanities program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dude Skywalker. No, it's not. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox. Not Dude Skywalker. That's old news. And our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week.